to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. A weekly podcast where the discussion is about the most recent horror and genre films. Intelligent talk on a genre that deserves intelligence. A conversation between co-hosts discussing not only the film, but also the connotation that the directors and screenwriters are trying to articulate. When you want more than a review, listen to Dark Discussions.
And speaking of perception, there's just one more scene I want to talk about, which is after Caleb discovers that Kyoto's a robot, Kyoto kind of peels off her skin, showing him what's underneath.
Now, wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, but tell me you weren't already thinking this 15 minutes earlier in the film. Exactly what he's thinking at that moment.
Which is he's a robot, too.
Oh, I considered the possibility.
Right, and that's what I like, is the fact that the writers were smart enough to know that this is what the audience would be thinking.
We've all seen Blade Runner.
Right. Exactly.
www.darkdiscussions.com, wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am here. Back under quarantine.
Yeah, I saw your post, yeah. All right, and in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Hi, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent. And we got a guest host tonight in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, my day was made today because I found out I can do Taylor Swift GIFs at work email.
Oh, Jesus. Guess who had to suffer with them?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, because someone's getting called into human resources.
I don't think so. Either way, let's see. So who are we for folks who just found this podcast? Are we a Dark Discussions podcast, part of the Dark Discussions network of podcasts? You can find us at www.darkdiscussions.com. We do a weekly podcast on a genre film, basically critique and review. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, grindhouse, art house, mysteries, psychological thrillers, midnight movies, cult films, and the like. We basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. You can find the feed. Well, actually, you can just listen to the episode right off the website. But you can also find the feed wherever our podcasts are found, so Stitcher, iTunes, whatever. And you can find it at two locations, under the Dark Discussion podcast feed, which is the podcast for the show specifically, or you can go to the Dark Discussions network of podcast feed, and that will include all the podcasts in the Dark Discussions network. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, or you can just go to darkdiscussions.com and press the contact me link or contact us link, and it will basically do the same thing, send a direct email to us. We will read your email on the podcast. We also have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Facebook group, or Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group, and you can join the conversation there. Follow us on Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, and whatnot. Eric, we do have other things on the website besides podcasts.
We sure do. There's some articles you can find if you poke around. You can also find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to contribute financially to support your online artists like us. Producing the show is not free. We have to pay for things like equipment and movie rentals and server fees and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on any page of darkdiscussions.com. And for every $5 that you care to donate each month, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and once every quarter draw one at random to do a show on. So if you'd like to do that, you can head to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Very, very good. And we did get a new patron just recently, Christine Stroh, who participates on the Facebook page a lot. And thank you for helping out. We appreciate it.
We do.
And yes, and then we have, I think, five other folks who donate as well. And we appreciate all that is given.
Every little bit helps.
Indeed. It sure does. All right. So that's pretty much the roundup here. But we do have one thing I have to do, which is November 5th, 2020, is when we were recording this episode. For some of our listeners who are curious, since we don't necessarily release the episode immediately after recording it, and one of our listeners, Pam, is always curious to know the actual recording date. So we have now included that in each episode.
Yeah. So everyone, please remember the 5th of November.
That's from like a Shakespeare thing, isn't it? Like that Caesar?
No, that's from Guy Fawkes. Which in popular culture got used in
V for Vendetta. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yep. That was a pretty good movie. Natalie Portman was pretty solid.
And now coming out in 4K.
That's right, 4K. That's right. All right, so before we get into our film and critiques and all that other good stuff, I guess Eric can introduce what we're going to discuss tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about a 2020 movie starring Lulu Wilson and Kevin James called Becky.
What happened by your fort, Becky?
For four inmates who escaped federal custody this morning. Authorities say the men are armed and extremely dangerous.
Come on, boy, let's go swimming. Let's
oh, can you wait a sec?
What is she doing here?
You let her walk all over you.
She's 13.
Jeff, this gentleman lost his dog.
Okay, well, why don't you give us your number?
My dog is a Rottweiler. Purebred, or as the Germans call them, Rottweiler Metzgerhund. That's why you never let them mate with other breeds. You get the worst of both.
Okay, I think it's time for you to go.
Stay calm. I'm looking for a key. It has this symbol engraved on it. You seen it?
No.
Well, that leaves little Becky. Where's Becky?
Wait!
He's gonna hold your dad still while I hurt him.
I'm not gonna let them get away with this. Was a little girl.
Becky!
When she was good.
Stop running!
She was very, very good. And when she was bad,
hey!
She was horrible.
What was the point of all of this? For a key?
It's worth much more than that.
Becky! You're clearly a special girl!
I don't want to have to hurt you.
But I do want to hurt you real bad.
That's right. Becky is a 2020 film. Did some of the festivals earlier, meaning last year. The film is pretty much a VOD release. Budget was unlisted, but it did make $1.1 million at limited theater releases, I guess, probably because of Kevin James's name, who's more well-known as a comedic actor for television. The film is directed by Jonathan Milo and Carrie Murnian, and it is written by Nick Morris, Lane Sky, and Ruckus Sky. And
that's
so
a great name. I wish my name were Ruckus.
That is a pretty solid name. It is. Yeah, I like it. I do like it.
If only there was some way one could legally change our names.
I know. It's a bummer we can't.
The film was actually postponed because of COVID, this is what it says on Wiki. The film was scheduled to have its world premiere at Tribeca in April 20th, but of course it was postponed because of the COVID. So it went to Redbox June 5th. They required the rights to it, and then appeared a couple days later on iTunes and then everywhere else. So that's pretty much it, except that it is getting fairly decent reviews, 70% out of 100 reviews. So this is being reviewed by all mainstream media, not just bloggers and people like us who just happen to stumble upon it. It did get a big enough notice to critics because of probably Kevin James' involvement, as well as it's going to be a Tribeca, and Redbox picked it up and so forth. So, all right, I guess we can discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Eric, since you've been kind of suggesting this one for a couple of months because it just seemed intriguing. I know you hadn't seen it prior.
Well, one of the reasons I was suggesting is because actually a couple of podcasts I listened to have done episodes on it, and I wanted to listen to those episodes, which means I wanted to watch the movie. So that was partial motivation right there. I enjoyed this movie. I thought Lulu Wilson was very good. I thought Kevin James was surprisingly good in a very different role than we're used to seeing in. I wouldn't necessarily call this a realistic movie, but it sure was a whole lot of fun. So, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right. Very good. Barrett.
I really enjoyed this film. I was really surprised that Kevin James did so well in such a dark role. I had heard about it months ago. I kept seeing advertisements for it. Maybe not months, whenever it first started getting shown and advertised. And I had wanted to see it. And then when you invited me tonight, I decided to check it out. I think the acting's really good. It's kept from being a great, great film by some of the unrealistic parts. But otherwise, it's a really solid film and it's very fun to watch.
All right, very good. For me, I actually watched it the weekend it came out on VOD. I just bought it. Basically, it was movie night with the wife. She wanted to watch a film, so we started playing trailers, and I knew she would be intrigued with this film because she's a huge King of Queens fan. I bought a bunch of the box sets for her, and she used to watch it way back, even before I even knew my wife. So she was curious and was kind of shocked when we saw the trailer how Kevin James was most certainly not the Kevin James from the show. However, we decided to watch it. The trailer was enough to intrigue her. And so, we watched it. And, it was a pretty solid film. It was, I guess the best term is fun, even though it is violent as hell. But it is a fun film because it's almost like Home Alone, but with absolute violence and less comedy. And it was a pretty solid story. There is like a mystery that is never really solved, which is kind of interesting. There was some issues I've had with the villains because the villains were incompetent to the point of like the way you would think they would act. They would have been more like mobsters or cartel people or true whatever kind of group they are, where they would not like negotiate or anything like they did. They did a little too much negotiation. But again, as Barrett said, this isn't necessarily a realistic film or take, even if it was trying to portray itself in the real world. But either way, it's a good film, and I think most genre fans would like it. Abe?
So I heard about this film since it came to discussion as to what we would be looking at for the following weeks prior. I watched it tonight, as I usually do most of the time, just to keep everything fresh. And overall, I think it's a pretty good film. It's not a realistic thing. You know, not a very, very realistic sort of film. It takes a lot of liberties with some logic, and it does make a few mistakes where some characters do some really silly things that, you know, come off as incompetent or just kind of sloppy. The villains, you know, for the most part, I found were very ineffectual. It was interesting to see Kevin James try for the first time since I've, you know, seen him in film as playing an antagonist, especially a white supremacist. I thought Lulu Wilson was very good in her role. I wasn't really crazy about her character, though it was fun seeing her slaughter Nazis. The mystery kind of felt, I wasn't really enthralled by it because it just didn't really feel like payoff either. But, you know, if you want to see Nazis get slaughtered, if you want to see, you know, a much more gory version of Home Alone, it's not a bad choice. It kind of gave you, reminded me a little bit of Hard Candy, you know, crazy young girl murdering a cesspool member of society. So it's not a bad choice if you wanted to see some bad guys get slaughtered. And overall, it's going to be interesting to kind of talk about. So, yeah, not bad.
All right, very good. And Mike?
I first heard about this. Somebody mentioned it on the internet. I know of Kevin James. I have never watched anything with Kevin James in it, to the best of my knowledge, before. From what you guys are saying, am I to take it that in King of Queens, he did not walk around with a Nazi tattoo?
That is correct. I've never watched King of Queens myself, but that is correct.
See, because yeah, Eric, you said this is show either. You said this is very different than what we're used to seeing him in. Well, since
he's
this
very
is
slap,
oh, yeah, yeah,
he's
he also
very slapstick comedy.
He also starred in Paul Blart Mall Cop and Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Yeah, I missed those. I'm sure I was going to get that to the theaters that weekend for the run of the Oscar nominees, and I just wasn't able to. But yeah, so this is exactly how I'm used to seeing him, because this is the only thing I've ever seen him in. But yeah, I was expecting the usual round of, oh my God, it's a comedic actor who can act dramatically thing, which, you know, comes around every few months. Yeah, and Phil, I want to correct you. You misspoke earlier. You said that this was a fun movie despite the fact that it's violent. This is a fun movie because it's violent. That's the whole thing, right? It's the violence is what makes this movie fun. Honestly, at the beginning, I'm blanking on the name of the movie we covered earlier this year. I was feeling deja vu, and I was kind of hating the movie, and it wasn't the movie's fault. Because it's a story about a man who brings his daughter to his children to like the secluded remote vacation spot to spend time with his mistress shortly after mom had died.
Yeah, the wretched, right?
The wretched, no, right? No, I'm it's like, a lodge.
No, that's the lodge, right? The lodge. The and lodge. I'm like, oh, okay. Shit, we already talked about this. I'm like, we can't have this conversation again about how shitty this is to do to kids again. Well, this fucking sucks. And again, it's not the film's fault. They didn't know that we were going to review this other movie with the same basic setup 6 months ago.
And The Wretched, too. I'm telling you, that one, same thing, right? Divorcee
well, no,
brought
he
up
didn't,
with new
no,
girlfriend.
No, he didn't ambush him with the girlfriend, right?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah
no,
the
he
girlfriend
did.
Was
he did,
the
you're
one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
He did.
Okay. All right, I take it back. You're right.
It's a theme for 2020, I guess.
Yeah, this is the theme. And it does turn into something else we've talked about lately, which is one of those almost reverse home invasion films, but because so much of it takes place out of the home, it doesn't feel like it. So that was nice. But once it started becoming violent, that's when I really started enjoying it. And the violence is really, really wonderful kind of in this.
I'm going to take that quote out of context from now on.
That's fine.
Mike really starts to enjoy it when it gets violent.
And the other thing is, I'm guessing nobody here watches Community, because Joel McHale also has a small role in this. And he's another actor. Phil, you watch Sons of Anarchy. He had a bit role in that as the guy that Gemma has a one-night stand with. That tries to steal from her or something. But yeah, so Joel McHale is another comedic actor from a sitcom. And I know he's done other things as well. I don't remember what the other one he's done. But and then there's Robert Mallet, which I enjoyed seeing. Robert Mallet was the big guy. Yep.
I got
to interview him at Scares of Care Weekend 2. And
I looked it up. That dude's actually 7 feet tall.
Wow. Yeah, he's massive. And I remember him. It was a great panel. I saw him, Tiny Lister, and somebody else that where they're basically talking. These are like the guys who always get played the heavies. And I just remember him saying how, like, he can, you know, because he's 7 feet tall, he can never get a role playing a father of three. And, you know, they said, well, nobody will believe you as a father of three. And he's like, but I am a father of three. But his actual claim to fame was punching out Robert Downey Jr. On Sherlock Holmes, because Robert Downey Jr. was insisting on doing the fighting himself, and he didn't duck when he was supposed to.
I remember that scene, actually.
And he sent him, apparently Robert Downey Jr. sent him a very expensive bottle of champagne afterwards to apologize.
Wait, to apologize for getting knocked out?
Because he was a dumbass and didn't do what he was supposed to.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, and so this poor actor / stuntman gets, you know, probably got some shit because, you know, the media would have covered his stuntman punches out Robert Downey Jr. Anyhow, so I was like, I liked the fact that, A, not only was he there and not only did he have a speaking part, but he had actually had a role. He actually had a role in the film besides stand there and glower and like being a James Bond henchman.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. I actually enjoyed the fact that the four villains were each kind of their unique characters. Yes, there is a certain Ransom of Red Chief kind of thing to this. There's a that does kind of stretch credibility. What the girl does when the girl takes out her first victim, I'm pretty sure what would have actually happened in real life is that there would have been a collision. It would have grabbed her, thrown her to the ground, and beat the crap out of her. That's probably what would have happened. But that is not how it plays out. This is very much a fantasy sort of film in a weird way. Unrealistic violence, but wonderful violence. It's got some great stuff in it. And so I really enjoyed it. Once you got past that first 15 to 30 minutes of teenage angsty stuff, which, again, wasn't entirely the fault of the film. It just has to do with the fact I've seen it a couple of times this year.
It was a little tough getting through that because
I did.
It's standard script stuff.
Similar beats that we've seen many times before, and they don't really do too much with it outside of what we've seen many times before. There was signs of something a little more under the surface, but they didn't explore it too much. And it kind of extends to the mystery of the MacGuffin and some of the background of the mother. But that kind of hangs up in the air, so it does kind of just go to the usual run-of-the-mill, like, you know, oh, how could you do this to me, Daddy? I hate you, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah.
Right.
And then shit goes bad.
Yeah, and you have, they're having this. First of all, so she's a brat, and I did not warm to her character at all throughout the entire film. I enjoyed what she did, but I never necessarily cared for her.
I would agree with that statement. Yeah, she was a stinker. No doubt.
Yeah, I was kind of.
But then, like, you know, she's having the fight with her dad in the car about the dead mother and about the cabin or the vacation home. And, like, you could see the two dogs sitting in the back seat. Like, they don't say a word. They're very uncomfortable. It's a very bad situation to put the dogs in, you know, when they're in that kind of thing. It felt so bad. It was just so awkward.
I like how it's filmed in the beginning, though, where it's showing her and it's showing the Nazi guy in prison. And they're both kind of in prison. She's at school and he's in prison. And it's kind of at one point it's got both their heads on the screen kind of facing each other. I kind of like the filming there. I thought it was neat.
That was pretty cool.
School is prison.
Well,
it
is kind of true because...
I know.
Proper machine.
Well, you know, it's because the prisons and schools are the only two places, one of the only two places that have, you know, bells that just can control the movement of the people inside.
All right, well, before we continue...
Hold on.
Before we continue,
I don't think this is fair because the reality is they have much better food in prison because the prisoners will riot if the food is bad.
All right, now, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki, wiki. A teenager's weekend at a lake house with her father takes a turn for the worse when a group of convicts wreaks havoc on their lives.
I think it should be. I think it should be narrated like a Kevin James movie. This summer, Kevin James is a Nazi.
Never seen any of his stuff, so I would not know, Abe. But I'm sure he's a talented fellow. He's pretty good.
He's good in the movie Hitched with Will Smith.
He's decent.
Yeah, that was pretty much his big break, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was a fairly good film. Wasn't?
Was that before King? Was that before King of Queens?
No, I think that after.
Film?
Oh, during. After or during.
All right, then his big break was King of Queens, because, I mean, he was the lead for that show for, what, 10 years or something? I mean, that show would last forever. And that's how Patton Oswalt, or whatever his name is, his career took off because of that show as well. So, I mean, they're still both, you know.
Oh, actually, you know what his break was? He had a recurring role on Everybody Loves Raymond. That's what his break was.
Was that before King of Queens?
Yeah.
Yes. Gotcha. And I never watched either show.
I haven't watched a sitcom since maybe 1982 or something.
So not everyone likes Raymond.
That's very true.
Well, that doesn't mean we don't like him. We just are indifferent.
No, yeah. Raymond's kind of an asshole. I liked everybody else on the show.
Anyway, let's get back to this movie here. that was a good observation, Barrett, about prison and school.
I thought it was just really neat how they did that and then showed their faces kind of facing each other, and it's kind of like a mirror of each other, you know?
Right.
That
kind of relates back to the ending, and we'll discuss that the very,
yeah,
very last.
Well, they also do a little moment when they're talking to each other in the walkie-talkies. They kind of cut them facing each other, but even though they're on different sides of the forest.
Yep.
All right. So before we get into anything else, because we're going to spoil it, let's just set it up. So basically, it's a father and a daughter heading to the lake house. The mother has passed away, so father's a widower. He's moved on and found another person, as most people usually do. And it's another single mother. And the daughter, as Mike said, is a stinker, or I said is a stinker, and he said she was just an ass or whatever.
Well,
word you guys use.
I wasn't fond of her, I said.
Well, let me just set it up, and then we'll comment. So she doesn't like the fact that the father's moved on, and Eric, we'll get into that in a moment to explain the point behind that. And basically, they're at the lake house, or house in the woods, or whatever you want to call it, for a vacation, a vacation of the new girlfriend and the son, to, you know, and him and his daughter. And then a bunch of criminals, where one has escaped from jail, are there to do something bad because they're looking for something. And that's pretty much the setup. Now, Eric, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that she may not have been likable, but I don't think it's an unrealistic portrayal of a teenager.
Oh, no.
No.
I agree.
No, no, no. You just wouldn't want to be around her.
True. I wouldn't want to be around her, but they're, yeah.
Especially
in those circumstances, in particular, I'm sure there are some teenagers that act exactly like that.
Well, biologically, they have proven that adolescence comes at the end of childhood. Because by that point, the parents have invested too much to simply murder the children. If they had started with adolescence, then they would just get all left by the side of the road and, you know, just not worth the hassle. So they start with, like, the whole cute, innocent thing and work their way up into being assholes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they become people, and people suck. Yes, yes, you did. This woman, this girl is at the brink of being an asshole, and pretty much is the entire film is a stinker, because she is typical person that refuses to compromise, doesn't want to see gray, Doesn't like
I don't
the...
know anybody else like that.
Well, she's basically broken apart by what's happened to her, and she's about to have a breakdown.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, we don't know enough because, again, this is the day of the event that's going to happen. So we don't know the past 8 months or 10 months or whatever it has been since the mother's passed, whether she's gotten over the issue.
Give us enough to fill it in pretty much, though.
That she's not.
Mom's
not over it.
She's not over it. Dad is moving on. She's not happy about it.
But well, and that's true. I mean, no one will ever get over. You know, there's always going to be a scar. But obviously, she's still living it, and for some reason, which unfortunately affects her as well as everybody around her, because life has to go on. It's just how it is when people or animals or anybody passes away. That's it. You know, you just got to deal with it. And of course, there's a mourning period. But if you have your mourning period go to the continuously forever, or for a good length of time, while everybody else has moved forward and accepted, they're in a different stage now, the acceptance stage. Then, yeah, she's not going to get along with a lot of people, and she's going to really be a stinker. And she still hasn't. Yeah, go on.
I think you're being a little harsh. Because I think it's a little different for somebody who's still being taken care of by, a parent. Guardian is the word I was trying to pull out of my brain just there. I think it's a little bit different for somebody who's not fully self-sufficient yet, to have one of their caretakers pass away than it is for an adult to experience somebody pass away.
Yeah, well, her whole life, you know, has been kind of the foundation of everything she knew has been, you know, has it cracked. It's been fractured. And, you know, she still hasn't had the found time to, at least in her mind, hasn't had enough time to patch it up and try to rebuild it. And, you know, it's clear that she's also dealing with a lot of stuff in school, because there's moments where you kind of get a point of view of her being laughed at and teased and stuff like that. She feels
Well, the stuff at school, it sucks because that's how school is, and we've all experienced that shit. So that's true. But the other thing is that, yeah, she hasn't gotten over it, and I didn't lose either of my caretakers when I was her age. So obviously, I can't ever speak for anybody who has. However, that doesn't mean the rest of the world doesn't move on.
No, it doesn't. But you got to remember how much time she seemed to spend with her sick mother as well, though. She didn't, you know, you get the idea that she spent a lot of time with her as she's dying.
Right.
That's probably even more horrific for her than if somebody just suddenly goes.
Well, I don't know about that. Not to use my own experience, but when my mother passed, she had cancer and she slowly went. And so when it finally happened, it was still shocking. Anytime it was shocking, but I was much better prepared than, say, one of my better friends, his mother died in a car accident. And, you know, they get a call, a knock on the door, and they say, your mother's dead. You know, so everybody takes things differently. So maybe a slow death that she saw versus her mother just dying in a car accident would both be the same.
Well,
for
it also
youngster.
It suggested that she was closer to her mother than she was to her father.
Yeah.
And also she's still a kid. She's they're at that point where they're still trying to find themselves and everything. And now, one of the people she's most close to in the world is gone, and it shows signs of antisocial kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the key, and we're going to find out about that at the end for sure, Abe. That's an excellent point, because I don't think it's all related to her not moving on.
No,
her not moving on is related to her issue.
Yeah, I think she's a sociopath right from the beginning.
Everybody's a sociopath.
But I was right in this movie.
Right, no, I don't think... I think there is an issue. There is something wrong with her, clearly. But she also, you know, it's not like she was indifferent to her mother dying. She's not a sociopath. But
she has borderline personality disorder then.
I don't know about Phil. You're trying to diagnose somebody, you know, from one really shitty day. I wouldn't go there, you know, while they're in the midst of teenage hormones. So I wouldn't go there. But yeah, I mean, she's kind of a rebellious teen, and she should be from where she is. And the father, as we discussed in the lodge, is being a selfish dick. Partly that's because that's who
Phil
is. He's being a selfish dick, Phil. He's got a 13-year-old girl or 14-year-old girl that he's with, maybe 15 at the most.
He doesn't even tell her about them being there. That's terrible.
Right.
Are we talking about the lodge or Becky right now?
Becky. I'm talking about Becky. And actually, I'm talking about Becky's dad. And he gets engaged to his girlfriend without telling her first.
Mm-hmm.
When it's apparently been about a year since mom died, this isn't something that happened when she was five. This is still a very fresh wound. And he apparently, and now understand, for him to get engaged about a year after she died meant he waited about a minute and a half for the body to go into the ground before he was at the funeral and hitting on people.
I don't know about that. That's
so
I have to disagree with that, Mike.
Okay, so watch. They met last week
He could have been friends with her before the marriage.
It doesn't matter. No, it does not.
Not really.
It does. Look at these things.
You're just wrong on this one, Phil. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
No.
You're making a statement that's your opinion, and that's it. I agree about him not talking to the daughter in advance. But the moment he decides to move on from the past,
yeah, that's different for everybody.
That's different for everybody, Mike.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
But he's not in isolation here. He has his daughter, and she has to come first. And he doesn't even considering when it's time for him to move on. It's not like she was okay if he did anything up being married. So he clearly moved on before she was ready for that. And he's going to have to drag her along with him because that's how that relationship works.
Right. And that's not going to work. That's the problem. He's not going to be able to drag her along. He needs to move at her pace. And if he was going to have a relationship,
her pace is separate. Her pace is most certainly.
It doesn't matter what her pace is because he's her dad. He's supposed to move at her pace.
I see what you're saying. You're absolutely right. But there's a point. Then he's got to get her some sort of
counseling.
And he can have
a girlfriend, just not bring her home yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
Forcing them to be together in a cabin. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's very selfish. It's very selfish.
Yeah. No.
Although in his defense, the Nazis showing up.
That's unexpected.
I don't think he could have seen that one coming.
No. He definitely couldn't. But he's being very selfish. I won't say that he's a dick, but he's very selfish.
Well, I won't say he's selfish. I'll say that he's misjudged what he thinks is correct. I don't think he's. I don't think he's intentionally being a dink to his daughter.
He's intentionally doing it. He's just not thinking. He's being selfish when he should be thinking about her.
Right. And
that's
it's not
why I
don't
want to call it selfish because I don't think it's intentional. Selfish is almost.
Oh, you can be unintentionally selfish.
That's almost the definition of being like people aren't usually intentionally selfish. It's that fact that they're not giving thought and consideration to other people.
Right.
And let's consider, again, put this in perspective. All right. The mom dies. When someone dies, they don't just come and haul the body away like garbage. You know, you are going to go to, you know, a funeral parlor, you know, or, you know, you're going to have to deal with, they will offer you, they will give you brochures. They'll say, here's some therapy, here's some counseling. And if you have a child, they're going to, you know, give you things about that. There's books that are written. There's all sorts of stuff that's those resources. Hopefully they have some family or friends that will be checking in and saying, hey, how are they doing? Hey, here's some advice. Hey, I've been through this, or hey, my brother was through this, or whatever. And there will be people saying, here's a little brochure, you know, like the handbook for the recently deceased. They'll say, here's something you should read. How to handle your children after their mother dies, because somebody got paid to write that. They'll say, hey, here's a great
book. What's your point? Yeah, don't bring your girlfriend home early.
It's not like he's going through, this is not like, you know, unexplored territory here. There is a very well-worn path for things of do, don't do. And I'm sure pretty much, like, if you open up what to do if your wife dies and you have children, open up on the first page, it should probably say, don't start fucking other women within 12 months.
I don't know about that. I don't know if that would be the case, Mike. I have to disagree with that. Again, it's different with every person.
No, you have to wait for the girl, for the daughter to be on board, and you don't drop a surprise engagement on her.
He could have sex, just don't let her know about it.
This is where I'm disagreeing with you, Mike. Is the first part. The second part, I agree about him with the daughter and not just dropping everything on her. The other stuff where he's dating someone else, I disagree 100%. I think that he can
put his daughter in a bad position with when she clearly was not on board with any of it. Yeah. And he should, and that I guarantee
that's what
Barrett
is trying to say, to keep it behind closed doors where she doesn't know about the girlfriend.
Yeah. That's where he's being selfish, though, is by bringing it out in the open. And not only bringing it out in the open, putting them together in an isolated location.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Also, we don't know enough about this relationship because we don't know if he's talked to her in the past and said, what's your opinion if I started seeing other...
Well, we can only go off what we see on the screen, right?
Right. Well,
not happy about it. She's not happy to see her there.
But that's my point, is that this girl is so much of a stinker in everything that I could see 6 months earlier, he could have maybe, he found a woman. He said, I like this woman. I want to start seeing her.
He's being careless with her, regardless, because she doesn't know about it. She gets there and she is surprised. Right. That is just the wrong way to do that.
Everybody's agreeing with all that. The only thing I'm saying is if he's dating this other woman, we don't know if he ever had a discussion with his daughter in the past 12 months about him ever seeing another person. We don't know. We just don't know. And she's the type of girl that he may have not wanted to even bring it up because, as we've seen in this film, she's pretty much doesn't like her father that much and probably didn't like him 6 months earlier. And
probably because he's before having sex with a woman within a year after her mother died.
I don't know. Anyway, I want to move on. This is because we're not going to.
It's a little too much time as part here.
Everything Mike says, except for the part about him dropping it on her at this moment. So let's just move on because it's just soap opera crap anyway, and it's not the part of the film that we enjoy. So let's go move on. Well, because we're just going to argue over and over and over again because neither of us are going to agree with the other. So, all right, where do we want to go from here? Eric, where should we go?
Sorry, I tuned out and muted myself while you guys were arguing. What are we talking about?
All right, what do we want to talk about? Let's talk about Kevin James, the Nazis, or whatever they are, the skinheads.
No, they're Nazis. They got a fucking swastika on their skull. That's a Nazi.
they're skinhead Nazis. So like the American skinheads or whatever.
Well, Kevin James is, but the other ones have hair.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point.
Yeah.
Either way, they're unsavory bastards.
Yes.
Yeah. For sure. Yes. But yes.
They are, and I'm still a little unclear as to what the situation was. They were being transported somewhere? Did we know where?
Probably to the prison or something like that. I guess it's just, you know, some way to get them outside prison because.
You know what it kind of reminded me of? It kind of reminded me of when I was watching it. I instantly flashed back to Last House on the Left remake.
Same here, actually. Yeah.
So
I was watching this with my buddy Dan and his wife Susie, and during that scene, Dan turned to me and goes, "You know, in movies in this scene, I always wonder why they decide to put all the worst guys in the same van."
Like Con Air. Yeah, like Con Air.
It's The Fugitive. There's another one that did it too.
Yeah.
Well, so they're being transported somewhere for some purpose, whatever, and they escape and. apparently they kill a family to take their car and go to this house where this family is because I guess they used to live there and had hidden something like in the cellar that they wanted to reclaim.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm thinking the house may have been like a rental property. You know, someone rented it off to people, and they happen to be one of the renters. And they
probably like a hideout or something like that, or some gathering place.
Yeah.
Although, exactly. When they first show up, the daughter's upset because apparently they were thinking about selling it, which makes me think that they own it, and maybe they were renting it out? I'm not sure.
Well, he says, I bought it, so my guess is it's a thing that they... I don't know. Maybe they had a... I don't know. I don't think they're very clear on it.
Yeah
they don't say...
If he went to prison, really, and he lost control of the house and it got sold. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah. And they didn't say when it came into the family that we're following. In other words, was it, you know, a house when the three of them were together before the mother passed away? Or was it something he bought just recently? I mean, we never find out out either, I don't think.
There's a lot of stuff we don't find out.
No.
Yeah.
A lot of things in the air.
So they show up and they're looking for this thing, and basically what happens is they take this family hostage, I guess, and they don't find... It's a key that they're looking for that apparently they'd hidden in the basement, and it's not there anymore. And Becky is out in the woods playing, and they have this CB radio. And for a while, they manage to conceal the fact that Becky's out there because they kind of play it off like Becky's the name of one of their dogs. But eventually, the Nazis figure that out and eventually use the radio to try and talk to Becky and get her to come give the key back. And it kind of becomes kind of a hostage situation where the Nazis are threatening to do bad things to the other people if she doesn't come give them their key.
Right. And everybody tries to deny, or I should say she tries to deny that she even has the key. But then eventually she comes out and says, yeah, I have the key. Yeah. So I don't know how the situation would have turned out had she just gave them the key and they left. I don't think so. But
I don't think
so.
No, they would have killed them because they see their faces.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think too. Yeah.
When they first get there, the big dude, sorry, I forget his name.
Apex.
He's kind of the likable bad guy, because apparently on the way over when they had to dispose of that family, he had a real problem with the fact that there were kids involved. So when they get there, he kind of tries to help the mom and the kid escape, and sends them out the side door, but they get caught by the other bad guys and get brought back to the house. So, I'm just like spewing plot at this point. Somebody say something interesting.
So, yeah, it's an interesting parallel that goes on between here, the character of Apex and Becky, in terms of how Becky's becoming more tainted by the killing she does, and he himself trying to redeem himself for those marks that he has on himself.
Yeah, Abe, if I could interject, there was a big scene that we didn't talk about when they do escape. Kevin James' character escapes, and they break him out of the bus, travel bus, whatever you want to call it. They eventually take the car, a cop car or something, and they pull over just this random family, and they kill this random family. And that's, I think, when Apex begins to have his moment of...
Yeah, that's where he crosses the...
I kind of just talked about that, Phil.
Yeah. That's the line he didn't want to cross, but, you know, it's in a way, basically the dynamic he has with Kevin James' character is that Kevin James is like a father figure to him.
I think he might actually be his father.
I wasn't it Cliff? No, because he says
the same age. They're about the same age.
No, because at one point Kevin James' character said,
They're not his real kids. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have them in the traditional sense. He took in strays and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I got confused because he kept on calling him son.
Yeah, because I think he calls them all like that. They're all like his kids.
Gotcha. Okay.
And basically, what the parallel is trying to talk about is basically an arc for Apex in which he's trying to break away from this dark path he's walking. While Becky, in her quest for revenge, after what happens later on, it becomes much more unstable and much more violent, much darker person. And there's several scenes where he tries to talk her out of the path. Honestly, Apex is one of the few characters that actually has any sort of character development or arc in this whole film.
That's actually true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else is pretty much static except for
well, Lulu character. Does a lot of changing, just extreme. Well,
yeah. Well, I think she was already a stinker. And then now she was becoming defensive, obviously, and she was already that type of person anyway. She just happened to not be in the criminal world. In other words, if she was brought up in some trash family where everybody was bad, she probably would have been bad immediately. And now that she doesn't have a center, I think she is going to her true identity anyway. So I see your point though. Barrett, because she at least was just a little girl that was a stinker prior to her final outcome, even if that outcome was natural for her.
Yeah. But I think his story is probably the one that's closest to redemption.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was the only character that I really actually I liked in the entire film. Well, I liked the father by the point where he gets taken out, because he became, you know, he was really cared for his daughter, even if he was a dumbass, as Mike said. And so I liked him at that point.
I just liked him because he had dogs.
I didn't have an issue with his girlfriend. I thought she was actually a decent person. And just by no fault of her own, got stuck in this horrible situation, both previous to and after the Nazis show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
she's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. She was put in a bad position because Joel McHale is a dick. But the problem is, like, they didn't really give her much, and they definitely didn't give her son anything to do.
Anything, no.
No,
The kid was just sort of there.
He was no Kevin McAllister, I'll tell you that.
Well, and that's why the movie's called Becky.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, she tried. She was fine. She wasn't very well developed. She didn't, like, have an arc.
No, she did have one good speech, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she's talking about how Becky didn't like me before you showed up, what makes you think she's gonna come back for me now?
Yes, that was.
She's a teenager.
Have fun with that.
Don't you know how?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. The Apex is the one, like I said, one character with an arc, if you can call it an arc. I mean, because he starts out not wanting to harm children, and it ends with him not wanting to harm children. We don't quite get what he did, you know. We weren't told what he did to the kids in the car.
I think it's pretty much implied he killed them.
Yeah. And then felt real bad about it.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I was very happy to see, that actor get that, that much speaking time and get this high profile role in this, as opposed, because usually he does just play the voiceless heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was one of, you know, outside the murder and mayhem was probably my favorite part of the film. And also I liked the resolution to his character as well. Because that is exactly how it should have played out.
Right, right. And I think besides Apex, I like the dogs.
Yeah. They were cool. The dogs were awesome. I was when I saw them, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Phil's not going to like this movie. But I was glad one of them made it.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
He was a good dog.
Especially when you think he's dead at one point. And...
Right.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, well, there goes the dog now, of course.
Yeah, yeah, the dog death was hard, no doubt. But at least he died a hero.
Yes, there's at least that.
Yeah, I thought it was, man, I don't think you should have to shoot a dog that many times to kill it.
No.
Well, that guy was an asshole.
Yeah,
he got his.
Yeah, he was.
And he might have just been a terrible shot, too.
Nah, there were a bunch of bullet holes on that dog.
Well, he did say he didn't like dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. The first bullet took him out, and then he
just overkill.
Had anger issues, yeah. Overkill. Yeah, something like that. Now, theories of what the key opened and what it was for.
It will lead to the Grail.
Well, I don't know about that. Dan and I were talking about it and thought maybe it was either a plan to build the Fourth Reich or maybe a bunch of Nazi treasure from World War II to help fund the Fourth Reich. Those were the theories we came up with.
I think that's too grand. I think it was probably... My first thought is that it was Marcellus Wallace's briefcase. but yeah, I think it's I would have just assumed money. I don't know. Maybe there's a story there. I wouldn't be surprised if they were planning a sequel for this of some sort. You know, maybe
that,
follow
actually.
Up on whatever that was.
Becky 2: Emancipated.
So yeah, I don't know. I'll see. I really don't think it matters. It's a MacGuffin. That's all it really is. It's a thing to move to give them a reason to be there. Because if all they needed to do was to be there for hiding out purposes, then you know you wouldn't have necessarily had to have that chase for Becky, and things would have played out very differently if he didn't have a thing there that he wanted.
And wanted bad.
And that means it also gave them an excuse to have to keep Becky alive.
Yeah.
Like burn the playhouse down.
There's several moments where characters do some really stupid things. There's one point where after the character Cole, who killed the dog, gets taken out, Becky doesn't even pick up his gun. Remember he had the gun and everything?
Yeah.
And he was like, why didn't you just pick it up? You would have had such a home advantage right there.
Not really. If you've never fired a pistol, they're not necessarily easy to aim you've never fired them before.
Still a logical thing to take is take the gun there.
Well, I don't expect if she's never fired a gun, then she probably wouldn't know how hard it is to actually hit somebody with it.
Well, she uses it at the end.
Yeah.
I have to say, the kills that she makes, I mean, while it's somewhat unrealistic, they're at least mildly believable because of the way they happen. That's about it.
Right. What about the R scene?
Oh, man, that was rough.
At that point, you would think, well, I mean, the key is, it must be something. It must be Marcella Wallace and whatever type of thing going on there. Because if you lose your eye, I can't believe anything would matter over that unless it is something that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Dude, he took losing his eye pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
He cut it off himself.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that guy's bad.
I mean, you only got two eyes.
The kitty scissors.
Oh God! Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was not a fun scene. I was squirming quite a bit.
Yeah, it was rough.
Just dangling like a meatball.
With some spaghetti.
Oh.
Slurp.
Yeah. I'm going to go vomit now.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was some logic to it. I understand he would be getting pissed. And, that's one of the things I liked about his character. There are multiple instances to have turned him into a more generic bad guy. So there are multiple opportunities for him to get angry and lose his temper and do things that were irrational just to make him more dangerous. You know, the reality is his eye was gone. He couldn't do anything about it. He had a thing he wanted. He could kill her after he got the thing he wanted. Killing her wouldn't have gotten him the thing he wanted, and he still would have been out an eye. It wasn't going to bring his eye back.
Yep.
Let's see,
he
your
wasn't
point.
Really the type to give up.
True.
I see what you mean.
So yeah. Now, let me ask you guys this. If he hadn't killed her dad, how do you think it would have gone down?
I'm not entirely sure that she wouldn't have wanted to kill her dad anyway, but at that point. But
I don't think so. I think at that point they had already made amends. So I think the father being killed was the full vengeance.
Yeah,
it was a breaking point.
Huge catalyst, yeah.
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 I mean, because there's several moment points when she flashes back to that, or when her dog gets killed, all those fresh wounds just keep popping back, and they just send her into a blind rage.
Right, and
yeah,
I don't.
Killing the dog didn't help for sure. Killing the dog didn't help.
Put us this way, yeah. The dogs she loved, so that right, and the father she was being a dink to, but
yes,
she still loved her father. There was no doubt about it.
He was her last link to humanity, really.
Yeah, well, and honestly, it's based off of how he talked and the way they interacted, even though she was pissed about the whole wedding crap. It seemed like he was a good father to her. I mean, he wasn't abusive. He did things with her. You know, he loved her. He really
right. It's not like he was beating her or anything.
No,
right.
No.
He had an okay relationship, just messed up by the death of the mother.
Yeah, actually, it was probably.
He's just a bit of a clueless dumbass.
Yeah, I think it was probably better than okay. I think it was real love. It's just that the mother
just
fucked everything up, right? And that's mother passing away. So,
well, and so, also teenage girls aren't always receptive.
Right. Yeah,
and the reality
well, just you
is,
wait, Phil. Just you wait, Phil.
Yeah, so
you're getting there. I know. My wife said that the other day when they come be teenagers, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the reality is, you know, with teenagers, for her to act out like that with her father, the way she acted out like that with her father, there has to be trust there between them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise she would not have been able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so kids will often act out to a measure of how far they know they can get away with it.
Right.
She would not have stolen the gummy worms if she thought her father was going to beat her for doing it.
Right.
So I think she was going to do what she did. Yeah, I mean, plus, you know, kids at that age, they've seen so many violent films anyway and video games and shit that, you know, we've been trained now that vengeance is okay. And to be honest, if I was in that situation too, and they did that to my dogs or my father, you're damn right. I'd probably have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, it depends on the kid. Like, I don't know. Like, we know. As a recurring joke on the podcast that Phil saw Taxi Driver when he was 10.
This is true.
And, you know, and I know a lot of, often like the TV, the TV version, edited versions, but I still watch a lot of horror movies when I was way under age, and my father took me to see plenty of rated R films in theaters when I was, I mean, I saw Scarface when that came out, and that was, I was, what, 12 when that came out?
Right. Yeah, see, so I don't feel bad anymore about Taxi Driver if he's watching Scarface. You saw The Thing when you were 11.
Well, when it came out, it was 11 or 12, because that was August of, was that August or was that 81. July?
I think it was 81, right? 80, well, either way, you were.
That's when I saw it.
Weren't even a teenager yet.
So. And I saw Hellraiser, and I was like 9.
Yeah, see, so I there's nothing wrong with watching Taxi Driver at 10.
Yeah, but you were watching at home.
It's just that you've restated that 15,000 times, so that's why it's a running joke.
Yeah.
Oh, and I knew, like, I totally knew when I was watching Scarface. I was like, okay, this is not something I should be watching. I went with my cousin took me and her two brothers to go see it.
Oh, I snuck 17. I snuck watching Heavy Metal, the animated film, when I was like 11. That was awesome. Big boobs and all that good stuff. You know,
and it has definitely left an impression.
Poster child for why not?
Now, so being that
major boob.
Oh yeah,
major boobage.
Yeah, that was an awesome film. Best one. But either way,
I forgot there was actually a point to me going there, which was that while that may have been the case for us, first of all, that I do know that, like, when I was in school, there were kids who were not allowed to watch rated R movies. I'm not saying they did.
I wasn't.
Or not.
I didn't mine in.
And also, we're dudes, and she's not. And dudes tend to, not exclusively, but do tend to be more drawn towards things that are violent. I don't know that a 14-year-old girl necessarily would have been drawn to watching Taxi Driver and Scarface and Hellraiser. Not saying they're just... I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it's implausible. I'm just saying that it would really depend on what kind of girl she was.
Oh, yeah,
she seems
I would agree
she's very much an arts and craftsy, sparkly, bedazzled cell phone kind of girl.
I agree with you that it depends on each child. There's no doubt. Yeah, there could even be a boy who would be like horrified and like, oh my god, what do I do? What do I do? So I agree.
Speaking of being, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but she obviously was the type that said vengeance. But go on, Eric.
I was just going to say, speaking of her being artsy and craftsy, my friend Susie is an art teacher and was beyond thrilled when Becky killed somebody using a ruler and colored pencils.
That was pretty awesome.
It was.
She was pretty fucking thrilled about that.
You know what? My wife is you know, school teacher and all that stuff too, but she was indifferent. You know, she was fine with any type of death. I was actually surprised. My wife didn't like freak out with the violence in the eye scene or anything like that. I thought she would, but no, she was all right.
That ruler scene was pretty violent too.
Yeah, my lord, that was awesome.
And her fierceness was really well done.
Mm-hmm. My only nitpick is far hit. Like, I'm willing to let the fact that. Yeah, you might not be able to be that effective with a ruler and colored pencils. The only thing in this movie that kind of nagged at the back of my brain while I was watching the movie was, why didn't she take that dude's gun?
You said that earlier. Yeah, it's like, why? I understand.
That's the only really thing that was really a bugaboo for me. And the rest of I was able to suspend my belief for most of the rest of it. But that,
well, her
that
knocking
particular
him down. I mean, I can
get over that, but the fact that he had a gun, he even fired it while she was attacking him, and that she didn't take that was like, why didn't she take that? That's all.
Yeah, I understand.
At least hide it so no one else can use it.
Oh, exactly. Get it out of the equation.
Yeah. I don't know that she was necessarily thinking rationally, though, and you know. I don't know.
She looked pretty calm.
If you just killed somebody, I don't know. But I think if you just killed somebody, you might look calm. But I think internally, you're not necessarily thinking of everything. That's why so many people get caught.
Right. And I think going by the end of the film, She's clearly had a psychotic break at this point because she doesn't seem to remember anything that happens after the pencils.
Well,
oh, she remembers.
Oh, she does. She does.
Remembers. Yeah. She's just
I'm pretty sure
that
she's lying her ass off at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I am. I am too. Yeah. Mike, why don't you think she's lying while the rest of us think she is?
I'm not sure. I wasn't sure whether to take. I didn't see an obvious clue to whether or not she was lying.
Oh, look at the way she
ate the mouth at the very end.
Yeah, look at the way she was eating that gummy. She was so smug about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I forgot about the gummy.
I think
gummy people are psychotic.
I think the clue to the fact that she's lying is that when they ask her what she remembers, we get a flashback to what happened.
Yeah.
And then back to her going, I don't remember anything. That's why I thought she was lying.
Yeah.
And she's wearing a key around her neck.
Yeah,
right.
As some kind of totem, or maybe she's going to try and figure out what it opens, or who knows. We'll find out in Becky 2, Emancipated.
Becky 2, The Last Crusade. Da, 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 da,
so I really liked him getting his eye gouged out. I liked the ruler scene. And then Kevin James getting his head mowed over.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, right. nice little sinister moment.
That was pretty intense. I like the super soaker in the.
Oh, that was cool. That was.
She used that quite smart enough. If she had kept the flow going, he might
have. Right. Exactly. That's the part that bothered me. That was really clever.
That is exactly the part that would bother me. She had him, and she just stopped the flow.
Yeah.
Like she's a 60-year-old man. Just cut it off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what did you guys think of the incompetence of Kevin James? Or did I already explain it by saying that the key was more important than anything else, period, even his eye?
He does some dumb things.
Oh, yeah. There's certain points where, the villains start to become more bumbling than, intimidating. Like there's certain points where he's trying to get, was it the woman's name, Kayla, to, call Becky out. And he doesn't try to grab the kid, her son, and use him to force her to talk to the radio or anything like that. He kind of shrinks away rather easily when he resists. And, it's just kind of, after a while, in the beginning, he's actually pretty intimidating. He has a good presence, but then it's just like, he makes the guys from Home Alone look more butch.
Well, and at the beginning, I think it's reasonable for him to underestimate Becky to begin with.
Yep.
But after she takes out his eye, you'd think he'd take her a little more seriously.
Or after she takes out two of his guys.
Yeah.
That too, yep.
And he does eventually start to take her seriously when he's like, she's more than we bargained for.
A little too late, though.
Right, exactly. It's a little late at that point.
Well, and I'm not to stereotype here, but he is a dumbass criminal Nazi fuck, right? I mean...
Yeah, he's already been caught once at least, right?
Right. So it's not like he's the most... And his brilliant plan was hide a key in a cinder block in the basement.
Yep.
So, and it's also hard to judge to a degree without knowing what it is the thing that he wants. I think what he did for the most part, he needed the key. They're in the middle of the woods. The key could have been anywhere, right?
Right.
If Becky's dead, the key is probably gone forever, or at least that's a risk.
Right.
So he can't kill her. And that's the problem. And now maybe we can argue that is that a fault of us not knowing what it is, right? Obviously, if we found out, oh, it's the key to a Cadillac, then we say, well, that was stupid. If it was the key to $100,000, well, that wouldn't mean anything. But if it was the key to, $50 million of Nazi gold, well, that's something else entirely.
Right.
Right? And also I feel like of the guys that Becky took out, one of them, you talk about the why do they put all the badass criminals together? One of them clearly was not a badass criminal.
No.
One of them clearly was a wet bandit type.
The one who got the motor from the boat into him?
Yes.
Oh, that was awesome.
The guy in the orange shirt, by the way, and I did like the fact that they gave each of the criminals personality, because the guy in the orange shirt was like the whole, the good cop, right? He was playing good cop.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, just give me the thing and I'll let you go. I'm not saying he was being honest, but he had a very different sort of
approach,
a vibe as far dealing with Becky than Kevin James did. And you could certainly argue that him being taken out was just dumb luck to some degree. Because like I said, I mean, she comes at him, she slides down, and she weighs, what, 4 pounds?
Yeah, exactly, and knocks
him
over.
With him, and I think he would have just really just grabbed her and beat the crap out of her when she's coming down that slide. I don't think he would have fallen and tumbled down, and regardless...
She does hit him in the neck, though. I think when she comes down, and that kind of that's the one spot I could see her causing him to fall, just because that's a bad spot to get hit.
And even so, it's like I said, it's a bit of luck, right? If she hit him a little differently,
plus it's a movie.
It's a movie, and it's a movie. This is the purpose of the movie. We are there to watch her. As I'm watching right now, I'm watching that exact scene play out as she kicks the ruler through his neck.
That's an awesome scene.
Blood just dribbling out.
off the groove of the ruler.
There are definitely several potentials for kill of the year in this. I can understand. She took out two guys. And one of them is an idiot. So I don't know how much she's really... underestimated.
And really, she wouldn't have, if the other guy didn't have a conscience, she would not have lived through him.
Right.
No.
That's the only reason she lives, is because he has this moment of conscience and feels bad.
What an asshole.
That is true.
Yeah. Because he was unstoppable for her. She could not have stopped him.
Like, he just bitch slaps the pit bull out cold at first.
Yeah.
And I was almost mad at him for it, but it was attacking him, so it's understandable. Yeah. You're allowed to defend yourself.
it was an awful lot of dog coming at him.
True. What other scenes or points have we not talked about that anybody had on their list?
Well, maybe I'm misremembering. One thing I want to say that I liked is that they downplayed the Nazi angle.
Yes.
By which I mean, you see the swastika on the back of his head, and he's got an SS tattoo, and we can see, I'm not sure if you guys noticed it, I could see, that the girlfriend was black.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's all we need.
He does make one comment at the very beginning when he first encounters.
I think so, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he doesn't like drop an N-bomb in there.
Compared
he doesn't
to
go
a
off like
Lottweiler.
On a talk about.
Doesn't he make a comment like your people?
Yeah, right. And it's a much more subtle thing, right? It's not overt.
Yep.
He doesn't make a comment. They don't hit you over the head with it. They let it. They leave it to the intelligence of the viewer, which you don't need a lot for this.
Right.
No. To pick up on the obvious undertone. So I did appreciate that.
Yeah.
And that does allow Kevin James to give a bit more of a restrained performance too, right? Because he doesn't have to go there.
Yeah, he doesn't have to constantly spew about this premise.
Well,
of white race.
It was almost like that stuff was there just to make us know that he was a really, 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 really bad guy.
Right. You see the tattoo, that's really all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see a lot of criminals that have stupid tattoos like that, and it's almost like they do it because they want to be badasses or something. And it could be that his character was just trying to be a badass, and that's why he got the tattoos. Because you're right, there is nothing in the movie otherwise except for having those symbols on his skin. And
he does, he does make one comment.
The Rottweiler thing. Yeah, the mixing of the breeds. But it's not... It's still not a really horrible scene. Like, they're not pushing it so hard that you need to get hit over the head with it.
Right. They make it very clear what's going on without hitting you over the head, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
And at that point, I mean, he's a bad guy anyway. He's a psycho or whatever. I'll say it, Eric. He's a sociopath. So
just like everybody else.
That's right. So, yeah, I think it was just a tool in his toolbox to piss those people off. And honestly, if it was something else, he would have said something else. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're trying too hard to pretend that he's not a Nazi.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that it's not like this was I see your point, Mike, but there was nothing in the movie besides those little things. I mean, it wasn't like the Nazi party or the skinheads are after us. You know, they just seem like a bunch of criminals, you know, bad people, and all that other stuff.
Well,
was like,
let's be clear,
just dressing on their badness.
Well, let's be clear, these dudes are Nazis.
Yeah.
The fact that there is a black woman in the house that they are interested in is coincidence.
Yeah.
They didn't target her. They're targeting the house because that's where the key is.
Yeah.
What was the other three people Nazis that were, or whatever group number of people that were with Kevin
Apex
James?
Apex was.
Was it?
Yeah, they
Apex
were talking about,
sure
them, they
the,
were talking about the brotherhood. Yeah.
They do talk about the brotherhood. I mean, look, they went to the trouble of every day of shooting with Kevin James, I'm assuming, of putting the Nazi tattoos on his head. I don't think he actually has them. Maybe they've been covering them up for a few years. So they wanted them there. They wanted the audience to be there, and they didn't want and at no point did they want the audience to think, yeah, and I'm just watching it now, like he's doing the chest thumping with the after he takes his shirt off and reveals the eagle on his chest, you know, doing the brotherhood thing with Apex. So yeah, it is a thing, right? This isn't some, they don't want you to think that this is some poor schmuck who had to get a Nazi brand in order to survive, you know, the gang culture in prison. So he is a believer in this. They just didn't have to hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I see what you're saying now. Yeah. All right. So it just added
tension there, you know, and that's all. And just by putting it there, it added an extra layer of tension because the girlfriend's black.
Right, right, right. And rather than do the typical stereotypical skinhead in Hollywood movie, they downplay it and have it there as a threat without, like you said, beating us over the head with it.
Right.
Gotcha. I see what you guys are saying now. All right, that makes sense now. Yeah. I'm on board. Especially the brotherhood comment. I forgot all about the brotherhood comment, and I forgot about the mixed breed comment too. I forgot about those.
Well, and there was that whole interaction between Apex and him, where he's talking about how every day in like how many days were they in prison, and every day in prison he's been thinking about this and getting back and getting the key so they can lift up the brotherhood. So again, they didn't hit you over the head with it, but there was definitely it was part of the text, not the subtext.
Right, right. That's a good point. Now, what do you think was in this? We don't even know. We don't even know if it was a lockbox. We don't know if it was a key to
a
cavern
sure
or house. We just know there's some sort of key. It could actually just be a symbol that if you hold the key, you lead the rule, you know, the brotherhood or something.
Maybe like in the Ark of the Covenant.
I was about to say. Thing. Maybe if you put it on the end of an amulet, it'll show you something on a map.
Well, I think Abe already said the Holy Grail thing. Someone said that earlier.
Yeah,
so I got to give them credit. Abe gets credit before.
Yeah, Holy Grail is just a cup of water. The Ark is a weapon.
Yeah. But the Grail makes you
the
immortal.
Ark will lay waste to your enemy's armies.
Don't look at it.
Abe has a good point. It makes you immortal, the Holy Grail. It even
yeah, but you're stuck
your
in the bedroom all their whole life. I mean, you just you can't go anywhere.
Oh, that's true.
Just stand in a cave and get old.
Yeah. I mean, look, we do live in, like, now thanks to the plague, that would much more a much better situation than it used to be, right? Because you can, like, McDonald's will deliver
Wi-Fi
to you.
In there, it'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much more you can do staying in a cave now than you ever were, like, back in the 1940s.
What about just building a town, like, 5 miles away from the cavern, and then you can just go back every week to, you know, drink from it. It'll be convenient. It's only, like, 5-minute drive.
Because I think
as soon as you step out of it, you disintegrate.
No, that's if you take you're telling me if you take the cup, but if you don't take the cup, then you just go back and drink of it every so often, I think you'll be all right.
Right. Sean Connery survives. He gets, he gets a port on him. He doesn't drink from it,
mm-hmm.
and it heals his wound.
All right, we're in the wrong movie here. So, So it'll be. I would have loved to, because my wife. That's the first thing my wife said at the end was, "Did we ever find out what the key was for?" And I go, "No, they didn't." And so we thought it was kind of weird. Yeah. And did Becky still have the key at the end?
Yeah, she did. She's wearing it.
So maybe the key makes you evil. So maybe she'll become this evil warlord or something. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's why she went psycho, because the key made her evil. It's supernatural.
No. You're going off the deep end here, Bill.
I like it, though. I like where you're going with that.
I don't know. Well, maybe it's like, maybe this is like The Ranger, which was another film I thought of, right? You know, girl getting chased in the woods by a middle-aged white male psychopath, where there wasn't something obviously mystical about the Ranger until you went back on a rewatch. Maybe there's more there than we're missing.
I don't think we're missing anything. I think it wasn't explained. And again, it's one of those things where...
Well, maybe it'll be there in the sequel.
Did the filmmakers know the answer, or did they just not bother to come up with the answer?
Maybe it's the key to one of the lions of the Voltron Force. Maybe that's what
it is. I'm curious why Mike thought of the Ranger, because actually every horror film is some crazy white guy chasing a girl.
Because it's a younger girl who starts setting traps for the guy. But that was it. It was a thought, something that we've talked about relatively recently.
Gotcha.
That or Hard Candy.
Right. I said Home Alone. And that's a boy.
Oh, yeah. And that's definitely there. The fact, by the way, that he didn't go full on Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street, where she's setting elaborate traps with exploding light bulbs. Like, her biggest trap was a tripwire and a board with nails in it.
Pretty effective, though.
It was very effective.
It was effective. There was no, like, spring-loaded booby trap. It was, he's going to trip on this and fall on the nails.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't kill him, and the only reason he really died was because he couldn't swim.
Right? He's a dumbass.
There's no attack in Nightmare on Elm Street. What are you doing, Mike? Come on.
Oh, and he's clearly the guy that when they were picking out, like, who's on whose escape team, he was, like, the one at the end. Like,
yeah.
Left over.
Yes.
All right. Fine. We'll take Kevin. Come on.
All right. Well, what about Becky killing Apex? Thoughts?
I love. If I'm in that position, I don't give a fuck that he let me go.
Nope.
You know he's involved. He helped kill your father. He helped kill your dog.
He admitted to killing kids.
He gets some bonus points for shooting my father's girlfriend in the leg. All right, we'll give him a little bit on that. But then he punched my other dog, so any goodwill is gone. You know, no, he doesn't. In her search circumstance, you know, she's not going to see the inner light of redemption in him.
Well, yeah. At the same time, I don't necessarily think he didn't deserve redemption, but I get it. You know.
Well, here's the thing. If he's from my religious background, if he deserved redemption, he was redeemed, right? If he was truly repentant, he was truly sorry, he was redeemed. He just got executed.
Right.
All right, fair enough.
Before he had a chance. So again, that's in my experience. And other people have different interpretations, and I'm not saying my background is the right and only way.
Let me rephrase.
Yeah.
I think that although I like to poke fun at Phil for always using the word sociopath, there's something ain't right with this girl. And I think the fact that she shot him is a sign there's definitely something ain't right with this girl.
Yeah.
This was definitely her star of darkness.
Because it was her chance to redeem herself if she'd have let him live.
Right.
And she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would have either, but I'm just saying that was her path to maybe normalcy. And once she did that, she was done.
I also enjoyed how at the end of the movie, the girlfriend and her son kind of find her after she's taking care of everything. And the girlfriend's just kind of like, holy shit. But like, she doesn't like judge her for it or anything. She like sits down right next to her and waits for the cops to get there.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool that although she was kind of horrified at the amount of violence, she was like, well, she got it done. Cool. I'm hanging with her.
Yeah, she was, I think she was pre-programmed to be, or she was already damaged. But, you know, she was the type of person that was apt to become the type of person she was. She probably wouldn't have if she hadn't had this thing that occurred to her this day. But because it did happen, she became one of the paths that she was programmed to go down, because not everybody who was in that situation and had to do what she had to do would become, a psycho too, mm-hmm. but some would, and it appears she is one of them that probably were already.
Yeah. You know, everything that's happened to her up to that point, it was just a major domino effect. You know, she's already dealing with problems beforehand, but the situation did not help one bit. So she didn't have any chance to recover from her old wounds to suddenly have these new ones pop on her.
Well, I'll say this, Abe, that's technically true, but a lot of people have worse issues than hers, because you could argue prior to her this day, her problems were just first world problems. And a lot of people who have those same problems that she had, like being picked on at school, being alienated, having their parents die, having a father that was clueless about, you know, moving on too quickly and whatnot, don't turn into psychopath kooks. So,
well,
was probably already programmed to be that way if a situation like this occurred.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was a stressor. It was a stress.
Nature and nurture, same time.
I'm thinking that she would have been that if she didn't even have any of those first world problems, and she was just a happy go lucky kid. This day, that still
would have
happened
done that to her. Yeah.
It might have. Well, I mean, here's the thing: most people, it's a case of, well, first of all, you know, we all get a character sheet when we're born, right? And you don't know. Unlike D&D, we all have a sanity roll. You know, you all have a score there.
Right.
And some people get an 18 and some people get a 3. Some people are more mentally resilient than others. And, you know, it's not just about whatever the outside forces are, whatever the outside events are. You can take two people, live through the exact same situations, and it will break one and will not break the other. Mm-hmm. We can see it. We can see this now, right? We can see this with the way different people have handled the whole shutdown in the pandemic, and where some people are fine with it, some people like went paranoid crazy on day one, and then everybody else was somewhere in that continuum. So some of those people will have the same backgrounds. And some of the people were just perfectly fine the day before, and then it just happened to play on whatever their particular psychoses and neuroses and fears were. We all respond to these events a little differently, and she may have never gone psycho if this had never happened to her. Right. I don't think she was like a ticking time bomb necessarily.
That's what I agree with. Yes.
And it's but
she rolled a 3 probably on the D&D score for sanity. So if something like this did happen to her, she wasn't going to save on the saving throws like people who rolled a 14 or 16.
So up until this day, she was a bratty teenage girl who may have had dark tendencies, but may have been all right had this weekend just gone ahead as planned. Whereas the Nazis showing up and killing her family took her down a darker path.
Right,
and I would like to see where this character goes next. I don't know if we'll actually get a sequel to this movie. Probably not, but I would be curious.
Well, the other thing is, though, if the other events hadn't happened in her life, right, then she may have been in a better place when this happened.
True.
And she may not have
snapped. Well, she would have got a
way,
+7 on the saving throw.
Yeah, that's that's where the environment comes in.
Right. It's the fact that it is that the proverbial last straw on the camel's back.
Yeah.
This was a bale of hay. You know, this wasn't a little thing. This was this really got her. Which is again why she should have shot Apex.
Right.
The only other thing we haven't really talked about that I want to mention real quick before we wrap up is that I liked her little trap in the minivan. I thought that
was cool. That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was solid.
So I think she's going to end up being a very good, if she ends up being a criminal, she's going to be a good one because she's clearly creative and intelligent.
Yeah. And she, at this point, appears to have lost any consciousness of, when I say consciousness, I mean,
morality.
Let me rephrase that. Empathy. That's the word I was looking for.
Empathy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she has no issue lying. She has no issues.
Killing.
Yeah. Yep. That's true too. And so on. So yeah, she could be, I don't know if a good one, Eric, even if she is smart, but, a dangerous one for sure.
I think she'll be good. I believe in her, Phil.
That's yeah. All right, I'll go for that. Yeah. All right, I believe in her too. So she'll be a evil and brilliant villain.
Well, kinda and like, who knows with that key? Like maybe she'll end up being the leader of the Fourth Reich.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. She has the key.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good one. Dexter. Yeah, but Dexter, he wasn't really evil.
No, I'm saying I don't think she'd be evil. She'd fight evil. Like she fought the Nazi guys.
She'd be Avenger.
Maybe.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. So she would be an anti-hero rather than a villain.
A Punisher.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Becky, she has a cape now.
But you know what though? I think her killing Apex makes me think that she will be an evil rather than.
I don't know. Punisher does some pretty iffy things.
Because she would have had empathy. She doesn't have empathy, I don't think, and she would have had empathy with Apex. I think if she.
She's not reading about him in the newspaper about things he's done and trying to fairly evaluate him.
Right.
And even so, right, even if you were sitting on a jury and here comes Apex, if this was a death penalty state, Apex comes in after this, if he just gotten arrested, because obviously it's going to be hard for the 7-foot man, tall man to hide after all of this. And how many people died in these 24 hours? You have the family of four in the car.
Yeah, but she doesn't know any of this about
Apex. I know that.
All she
I'm
knows
just
about-
saying. I'm
all
saying
she knows about Apex is that
it doesn't matter that his heart changed. What she knows is that he was responsible for murdering her father, and it doesn't matter that he didn't pull the trigger.
He was there. Yeah,
he was part of the group of people that murdered her father. She wasn't differentiating between Kevin James and his three stooges. They're all the same.
See, and that's why I don't think she has empathy.
But Phil, it's in the heat of the moment when it happened.
Right.
This is the reason why you don't put the person who's the victim on the jury, right? Because it's just because that's how she feels about those people isn't necessarily going to apply evenly to other people.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. Yeah,
I'm not saying she's not going to be a psychopath. I'm just saying I don't know that we have enough information to go by quite yet.
Well, let me put it this way. The screenwriters intentionally put in her deciding to kill Apex after us, the audience, have learned enough about Apex that he isn't all evil. He's just stupid and in a he became, I guess, an orphan to a villainous person, the only person that loved him. So by the screenwriters wouldn't have put all that in there if they didn't want to shock us with her being cold-blooded and killing him. And so I think it was intentionally done by the screenwriters to make us understand that she is becoming bad and not becoming a vengeful.
I don't know about that. I think there's a lot of different – it's possible that's the reason why. I think there's a lot to it, because if you take that out, this whole film becomes a lot less interesting. You don't have that sort of conflict between the villains. Becky is her survival becomes a lot less assured, and you suddenly have to start coming up with more and more.
They didn't have that
scenarios for her taking the guy out.
No, I'm not disagreeing with all that, Mike. I'm just saying for them to decide, meaning the screenwriters to decide to say, okay, let's have her kill Apex. They didn't have to have her kill Apex. They chose intentionally for her to kill Apex in the screenplay. So why did they do it? And I'm just trying to say that I think to make us think or understand that she is now becoming evil like the Kevin James and those villains. And another reason I think that too is because of the split screen and what Abe and Barrett said earlier about how they're like dualities and she is becoming him.
I just think it's true. It's if she hadn't killed him, if she had let him walk, I think it would have been a bit of a bullshit moment after she already murdered three people or killed three people, whether you want to call it murder or not.
I don't think so, simply because of that scene they had earlier in the field. Had that scene not occurred, then I think you're right about it being a bullshit moment if she didn't shoot him. But given the fact that he was in a position where he easily could have killed her and chose not to kill her and told her that he's walking away and urges her to do the same, I think that scene is there. I guess I'm agreeing with Phil on this point, that scene was there to make it shocking later when she shoots him.
I just think that you can make an argument either way at this point.
I agree.
You can come up with, going forward, if they have Becky 2, Electric Bakaloo, later on, that they could use that as a sign that she's a psychopath and remorseless, or they could show, or they could argue that it was perfectly justified given the context of the situation. I think it could go either way.
I don't think me and Eric are disagreeing that you can interpret or think of it the way you're thinking of it too, Mike. It's just that I'm with Eric too, because Eric even added the extra scene, which was the field scene. They put all these scenes in there, the screenplay, for a reason. And part of it may have been to make it more interesting, like you said, Mike, but it also, she did not have to kill him, especially after that scene. So that's the only reason why I think it was done, to make us understand that she's becoming like Kevin James, and how Barrett mentioned it earlier with the split screens and all that other stuff. But again, you're not necessarily wrong. Like, your interpretation is fine as well. It's all good.
Now, my question is, if there is a Becky 2, are we going to have to do a diehard scenario where it's, I can't believe she's been tracked down by Nazis again, sort of thing? how could the same thing happen to the same girl on Christmas a second year in a row? Or is this?
I think if there's a Becky 2, it has to be the story of the key, right?
I would think. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
because I don't think it matters her at that point. It's more the key. That's the thing that is left hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what will determine Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's the key. I want to know what the key is.
I'm not haunted by not knowing what the key is. Yeah.
But you know there. I guarantee you that on IMDb or Watch or Metacritic or whatever, Rotten Tomatoes, somebody has posted, and probably a plethora of somebodies have posted horrible reviews for this movie because they never told you what the key was.
Right. Well.
Right. And unfortunately, this film isn't as high profile or as important or as good as Pulp Fiction, so we'll never have college dissertations to explain. And so we'll never know. We just never will know.
No, and that's another thing that in the end scene made me think that, because like for me, that last shot, where she has a flashback and tells them that she doesn't remember anything, that's tied directly into the fact that she's wearing that key around her neck in that scene. So clearly she knows what it is. She knows it could possibly lead to something important and is choosing not to tell anybody about it so she can look at it herself. I think that's another sign that maybe she's headed down the wrong path.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually solid.
I can buy that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then doesn't she give us that weird look or smirk?
A little smirk almost.
Yeah.
Right, her mouth kind of turns up just a tad bit.
Yeah. And again, that's a Hollywood cliche or a film cliche too. But you know, they throw those things in on purpose to make you think, uh-oh.
Like Midsummer, where she smiles.
Yeah, right.
Like
right.
Omen.
Yeah, right. That's another one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Common theme, common trope, common cliche. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about this film, Becky? Anyone?
I'm good.
No, I'm not writing off a sequel. I don't know why they made this movie. I don't know the story behind it. I don't know why Kevin James and Joel McHale, who, you know, went in it, because really there is nothing in this film that is necessarily, other than their casting, going to mark it as exceptional as compared to things like The Lodge or Wretched, and many, many other, or The Ranger, or many, many other similar type of films that, you know, we've discussed as far as, you know, just a bunch of people getting killed by somebody who's gone a little wacko. But I'm curious why, like, were there ever plans of doing this as a theatrical release? Like, you know, how they got Octavia Spencer and they just had to forego it?
That's a good question, Mike. Well, you know what? A lot of those Tribeca and Sundance type films star a lot of major artists or actors and actresses who take, you know, lesser money just to play a role that will expand their thing or just to get noted or whatever. And some of those films are usually picked up by big Hollywood and then they become major releases, while some never do. And then IFC or Dark Sky or someone else buys them. Right. And maybe he did it, James, and this other guy, McHale, did it to, you know, add something to their resume, add something that's different from what they usually do. And then it was going to play a Tribeca, but no one decided it was good enough to buy as a theatrical release. So Redbox Productions bought it and they decided to release it as a VOD. And so that's what I'm guessing, Mike, because
right.
A lot
and
of
this.
Yeah, oh, go on. Oh, let me just say the last sentence, which was a lot of films that we do see at theaters are films that were picked up from festivals and weren't actually produced by the Hollywood production companies themselves. But go on, Mike.
Right, but they also usually don't have a name actor with two massive comedy hits like Paul Blart and Paul Blart 2 on their resume.
Well, actually, it depends. You know, like there's a lot of films that do that. That's what my point. If you go to Sundance or Tribeca, a good percent, not all of them, but a good percentage of those films have well-known TV or movie actors or actresses in them, even though they're independent productions. And don't ask me why. And then those films, if they're lucky, will be picked up by Columbia or someone like that, and then release
Phil.
It. Yes.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't.
So anyway,
you always find a film like with Kevin Bacon in it, or Helen Hunt, or something at Sundance. You just do, you know, and they were independent films, and then sometimes they're bought and they're released by the big companies like Universal.
So anyway, the point is that when you see a movie like Babysitter, you know, got a sequel. So if that got a sequel, if this is doing well enough, and if the horror community is talking about it, I have to assume that it's doing fairly well. The chance of a sequel aren't small. If this is being successful, if this doesn't have a huge budget, if this has like a $2 million budget, it could easily make that money back. And look, I don't know about you, but I have seen people buying movies at Redbox, renting movies at Redbox. I yep. totally see someone going, "Oh, look, there's a Kevin Dane movie with with a little girl."
Where are they?
This will be a good one for family night. Bobby just loves Paul Blart too, so much more than the first one.
Not in this case. The poster is not a family friendly poster. I mean, it's a PG-13 poster, but it's not a poster that would say.
Yeah, her face is covered in blood.
Yeah.
Just saying, people miss little things like that, though.
They deserve, just like the hitchhiker in that movie, that terrible movie.
You mean that wonderful movie. That artistic masterpiece.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know about that.
I think it was called The Eyes of Her Mother?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be in the middle of the road on that.
I was offended.
I don't think it's that great. I just like to torture Phil.
Yeah. As you should. As you all should.
Yeah, if nothing riles me up, I it's easy to torture me.
And also, I want to point out, if you've ever been at a Red Box, I mean, these are old, beat up. They're out in the weather, you know, outside in the dark, out of a supermarket or a Walmart. You can easily miss the blood stains on the girl's face.
It's possible.
Ours aren't in Michigan. We take care of our Red Boxes. They're indoors.
Yeah, I never used one.
Yeah,
yeah,
me either.
The Red Box is over here. Oh yeah, I used to use them all the time before I started doing VOD.
Yeah, I already had Netflix by the time Redbox came out, so I've never used it.
Gotcha.
Same here.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's solid. You just put your credit card in for $1.29 now, I think. It used to be $1. And they have like 100 films that you can choose, and then it just pops out. And then you return it, 7 days later, and that's it. And you don't have to return it to the same Redbox either. That's kind of cool, too.
Cool.
And Yeah. And if you don't return it, then I think eventually they'll charge you, $15 for the movie or something, and you get to keep it. But
so basically, it's an automated video store.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And the
yay, late fees.
Yeah, and the
let's bring those back into our lives.
They're pretty good. The disc. They're not like. A lot of them, people take care of them. I haven't found any, at least in New Hampshire. They don't take care of them.
There's nobody in New Hampshire, so.
Well, we got beers. we need the beer spray at the gas station.
We never had
beer spray at the gas. Yeah, you missed that whole argument last week, Mike.
What's that?
Whether they have beer spray in gas stations.
My answer to that would be it depends on where the gas station is.
Well, yeah,
Alaska, maybe.
That's pretty much the answer, yeah.
Yeah, that was the answer. Yeah. That was awesome.
Oh, I think we're ready to wrap this up.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
All right. So any news or anybody? Eric, any films or news or books or video games that you wanted to mention that are genre related that folks that listen to this podcast may be interested in?
I did a couple of rewatches. I rewatched Cloverfield for the first time in a while. It's still good. In fact, I haven't rewatched it recently today when Pickle jumped up on me and was standing on my chest I managed to catch a snapshot of him and posted it on our page.
Eric, I have to interrupt. I have to. Because okay. People are thinking you're talking about you took a picture of your dick and posted it on the Facebook.
That's a fair clarification, Phil. Thank you. Pickle is my cat. Pickle is my cat.
All right.
No, I did not post a picture of my genitals on the internet.
But if you call your genitals pickle, man, woo.
Not today. No. Oh, my God.
I have to
say it. No, but I posted a picture, a wide angle picture of Pickle next to a picture of the Cloverfield monster, and they look similar from that perspective. It was kind of funny. I also rewatched Friday the 13th. I realized I didn't have a Blu-ray copy of that, so I got the steel box, or the steel book, rather. So that's a fun one to revisit.
Is that the original or the remake one?
The original.
Okay, did you buy the box set by the chance?
I did not. I don't like enough of those movies to spend that kind of money on a box set for them. I like the first four and then six and Freddy versus Jason, and that's about it. I'm not going to spend like $150 for that. No, but it looks like an awesome box set for people who are totally into that series.
And how was the Steelbox Blu-ray, was it good?
It looks good, yeah. It's got some special features I haven't worked all the way through yet, but there's like a panel they have on there with pretty much everybody except for Kevin Bacon and some interviews and stuff. So it's cool. And then tonight I watched Antebellum starring Janelle Monáe. This was actually marketed fairly heavily at one point. A trailer for it got stuck in front of a movie I was watching back when we had theaters. But it got released VOD, and they were doing the stupid rape you rental price on it for a couple months. But now it's down to regular rental price.
Oh, goody.
So I watched it, and I think they were trying to kind of market it as a horror movie. And I think people who go into it expecting a horror movie are probably going to be disappointed. There are certainly some horrific things that happen in the movie, but it's not like a slasher or a supernatural anything or anything like that. So it's certainly not your standard horror movie. So that's a warning for people going into it. It does have very heavy hit you over the head themes of feminism and anti-racism. So if you don't like that, I'm talking to you, Mike. you might not enjoy sitting through the movie, but it was very, very well done. The movie's very well made. Probably the best original score I've heard in a movie this year. And the acting was fantastic, and it was well directed and all that stuff. But if you go into it looking for, you know, a Friday the 13th or a Poltergeist, you're going to be sorely disappointed. It is more of a dark drama. So just know that going into it.
Yeah, I think they were marketing it big. And then when the critics started getting the previews and to get to watch it, and they started saying it was not that good, at least the critics anyway, I think that's when they decided to.
Well, it's very strange, and it's reminiscent of another movie, and if we ever talk about it, I'll mention that movie, but I don't want to right now because it would kind of totally be a spoiler.
Fair enough.
And that's what I've been watching.
All right. What about yourself, Abe? Video games, movies, or anything?
I've been playing hunting game called Phasmophobia with my brother. It's available on Steam. It's really a lot of fun. You can play up to four players, and you go into different locations, old abandoned farmhouses, an asylum, an empty school. And you try to investigate the ghost lurking there and try to figure out what it is before the ghost tries to hunt you down.
Is this a PC game?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. It really is pretty addictive. You get different kinds of ghost hunting equipment. You try to locate it and figure out what type of spirit it is, just depending on the type of evidence you find. And it's getting updates, it's getting little changes, little things that added, and it's a lot of fun. And if you get a group of friends together, it can be a real blast.
Let me ask you this, Abe, is it console related? Can you get it there? I mean,
I would be surprised if they made a console version, but right now it's just on PC.
Right, right. And how much is something like that going for?
I think it's currently $13 or $14 right now.
Was it through Steam?
Yep.
Okay. Very good. So that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I've also been playing a horror game called Visage, which had been in limbo from this since Kickstarter back in like 2018. I finished. It's a story where you place a poor schmuck in a house where you end up encountering different kinds of horrifying entities, and there's some kind of connection between all of them. And it's done first person. You can play in standard or in VR. I finished the first chapter, which was pretty solid. But right now they've been doing updates on any bugs or glitches and stuff like that. Some kind of wait until they fix those so the experience is better. It's a smaller indie company, so it's not like one of those big studios. So I had expected it would be some kind of things that we fix up, but so far it's pretty good. I'm going to kind of withhold my judgment on recommending it until I finish it.
Now, Abe, the other chapters that you haven't played yet, are they? Did that all come together, or
yes.
One of those games? So it's not one of those games you have to wait for chapter
no.
two.
Everything's released. It's just mostly just having the time to do stuff. Just I've been working and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And I've also been watching the series Primal, the Adult Swim animated series. It's a fantasy prehistoric series created by Genndy
Tarkovsky.
Yes, thank you. I was going to butcher the hell out of trying to say that. And it's really solid. It has no dialogue, but it has a lot of expression in its characters. The creatures are really cool. It's a mix of fantasy, horror, and some just kind of it's a paleontologist's worst nightmare, but it's a lot of fun.
Who is this guy? Is he like an American guy or something?
I don't think he was originally. He was born in the USSR, he came to the United States. He's best known for a couple of series, but one of his most famous is Samurai Jack.
Now, Samurai Jack and Dexter's Lab were his two big things. He also did the first Clone Wars cartoon that was the hand animated, not the CGI one.
So is this guy like art house?
No.
No. But he's a big name.
But if there's no speech, isn't that kind of art housey?
No.
So why wouldn't have any speech then?
Because it's the main character's a caveman. And his companion is a dinosaur.
Oh, okay. So it's like a fictional
that stopped the Flintstones.
So it's a caveman world where dinosaurs exist.
Yeah.
So it's like okay. That's not cool.
Fantastical elements and stuff like that, and it's just because the characters communicate through gestures and facial expressions and stuff like that, and it's kind of so you kind of get the feel of what they're trying to communicate to one another. As it says, it's a nice mix of different kind of genres, and it's a lot of fun. The first season is already complete with 10 episodes, and the second season has been confirmed for 2021. So I'm hooked. I'm looking forward to it. It's really solid. If you have Xfinity, Hulu, or anything like that, you could watch.
I think it's on HBO Max also.
Yes, as well. So you can just binge it. It's really solid. And this guy is just some really good work. He's a solid animator. He's a solid director. It's a really awesome series. And if you like something just absolutely badass and exciting, I'd check it out.
All right. Very good.
Also, I think, very influential. I think a lot of young animators, because, I mean, Dexter's Lab is like 25 years old now.
Yeah.
And Samurai Jack is about 20, so... There are a lot of animation stuff has definitely been influenced by his work. It's a lot of kinetic action stuff, Phil. So you should probably check it out.
Right, and it's not like still pictures, right? It's actually animation where people are walking around like Disney or Bugs Bunny or something,
it's
right?
It's actual animation, yes.
Gotcha. All right, sounds good. Anything else here?
Nope.
All right. What about yourself, Mike? Anything you want to bring up?
Not much. I'm hitting the third season of a TV series that I'm watching with my wife. And so we're almost done with that.
And it's not genre related because you didn't mention the title. Is that right?
Sure, that's why I didn't mention the title. Gotcha. And I just started watching. I watched the first episode, Hellstrom, on Hulu, which is a Marvel TV series, but it's based on the character Son of Satan.
I watched a few episodes of that.
I've only gone through the first episode. I wasn't necessarily bowled away by the first episode because it is very much a, oh, look, exorcism story. Person going around dealing with exorcisms. I think I saw this in a TV series a couple of years that was called The Exorcist. So it didn't do anything to distinguish itself to me, but I know the character from the comics, so that's going to kind of keep me going to see if it differentiates itself in any way or distinguishes itself in any way from generic exorcism storylines that they've done in other sort of series and movies. I don't know how far you got into it, Eric.
I got like 4 or 5 episodes in. Solidly mediocre, in my opinion. I kind of dropped off. I don't know if I'm going to go back, but it's not because I hate it. It's just because I kind of found something else.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was concerned about. That's disappointing. Other than that, I can't really think of anything that I have. I watched the new Borat film, but that's unrelated. I watched the Boys, but that's kind of old news.
Anything else, Mike?
No, that's about it. I can't play my Xbox because my Microsoft account has been hacked.
Yeah.
So fuck those fuckers.
All right. So let's move on. Oh,
that's about it.
Okay. So let's move on to Barrett.
Because I'm playing a PC game that I got off Steam called Stygian: Reign of the Old Ones, and it's a Cthulhu-based game that seems kind of interesting.
I've heard of that one.
Does it take place in like the 1920s or 50s or? It's,
yes.
Okay. And what's it called again?
Stygian: Reign of the Old Ones. Now I got it on sale. It was like 75% off. I think it's normally $29.99.
All right. I'll have to see if it's on Xbox. So I'll have to get that name.
It's a Steam game, right?
Yeah, it's a Steam game. It's pretty interesting.
Only Steam?
I'm not sure.
I'm with you, Phil. All these Steam games are bullshit. We need them on the console.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do, Barrett, is I'll just text you tomorrow for the actual name so I can write it down.
Yeah, but it's very heavy Cthulhu. Heavy, heavy. And the currency in the game are cigarettes.
Nice.
Which I thought was pretty interesting. Exactly.
I'm surprised. Don't they have regular money, too?
No, it's all cigarettes.
Even though it's supposed to take place in the quote unquote real
world.
Well, what did you say, Phil?
Kind of in the real world. Something happened with the old ones, and you're in you're kind of in Arkham, but in a weird reality. So
sort of like Fallout uses bottle caps.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So you go into Silent Hill and you get sucked into the opposite reality type of thing.
Yeah, except, you're already there when you start the game, so.
Gotcha. Yeah, bottle caps, that's the best. Fallout's a pretty damn good game. Anything else, Barrett?
That's
a recommend?
I have not gotten very far, but it's got very interesting graphics, and it's basically a role-playing game, so.
But is it recommend so far? Interesting.
So far, it is a recommend, yes.
Okay, very well. All right, so let's give our final thoughts on this. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called The Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can get it wherever you found this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are supposed to start up a podcast again after taking a minor hiatus because of your school issues with the COVID.
Well, the school issues, and we were doing Lovecraft Country, but yes, the
Lovecraft Country too. Yeah.
Right. The podcast Cinema a la Carte, which is sort of a fill in the gaps between other spinoff podcasts that we're doing series where we cover movies that are not normal dark discussion films. So recently we covered Collateral, we covered Jack Reacher, we covered Forbidden Planet, we had done Inside Out. I have no idea which of those have or have not yet been released, but Phil and Eric and I take turns choosing a movie and then discussing the movie on a roughly monthly basis.
Yep, absolutely. So we already have another film chosen to record. We haven't done it yet. It really comes down to when Mike becomes available, and he will let us know. All right, so that's pretty much it. So let's go around and give our final thoughts on Becky. So Eric, what do you got?
It's not a great movie, but it's a good movie. I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it for a rental.
All right. I concur with exactly everything Eric said, so that's my opinion. So let's go to Mike.
Like I said, it's a fun film. It is not the greatest movie ever. It is a fun film. If you like watching a little girl inflict unspeakable violence on grown men who deserve it.
Yeah, that's true. They do deserve it. Yeah. All right, very good. Barrett.
I really enjoyed this film. I would not put it on the level of great, but it is darn fun, and I like hyperviolence, so it's a lot of fun to watch.
Abe.
This is a pretty good movie. It can be a little unrealistic at times. It can be a little angsty with the teen angst shit, but overall, the performances are good. Some great kills. And if you want to see Nazis get the shit kicked out of them, this is a good way to go about it.
All right, sounds good. So once again, this is a Becky, a 2020 film starring Kevin James as the big name, but also Joe McHale as another big name too, and then Lulu Wilson, a young actress, plays the lead, the title character, and so forth. She actually was in Animal Creation. How about that? Available everywhere VOD is. You can buy it, rent it, purchase it. It may actually even have fallen into like one of those Netflix services or Amazon Prime. I'm not even sure yet. It could already be there. Worth searching around before you do rent it. But if you can and you're interested, you can find it pretty much anywhere. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about Becky. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.